Today is Monday, October the 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan says that he instructed his foreign ministry to expel the ambassadors of the United States and nine other Western countries for demanding the release of philanthropist Osman Kavala. And Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni says that the deadly blast in Kampala led on Saturday appeared to be an act of terrorism.
Our joint team of bomb experts has established that the explosion was out of a crude device which was assembled using local materials.
A senior U.S. diplomat is calling on North Korea to stop the missile tests and get back to talks.
We call on the DPRK to cease these provocations and other destabilizing activities and instead engage in dialogue. We remain ready to meet with the DPRK without preconditions, and we have made clear that the United States harbors no hostile intent towards the DPRK.
A building shook in Taipei on Sunday as an earthquake of magnitude 6.5 struck northeastern Taiwan. But there are no reports of damage. And the UN Development Program is launching a plan to help millions of Afghans who have lost their livelihoods in the midst of the recent political turmoil. We'll have these stories and more coming up right here on International Edition. Stay tuned. And for our top story, the U.S. military says that it killed a senior al-Qaeda leader in an airstrike on Friday in northwest Syria. AP's Julie Walker reports.
Abdul Hamad al-Matar was killed by a drone strike, which came 2 days after a U.S. military outpost in southern Syria was hit by a coordinated attack that included rockets and drones. U.S. officials said no American troops were injured or killed in that attack. Army Major John Rigsby says in a statement the killing of al-Matar will disrupt al-Qaeda's ability to further plot and carry out global attacks threatening U.S. citizens, our partners, and innocent civilians. I'm Julie Walker.
A senior U.S. diplomat is calling on North Korea to stop the missile tests and get back to talks. AP's Karen Chamas has more.
We call on the DPRK to cease these provocations and other destabilizing activities and instead engage in dialogue.
Sung Kim, the U.S. envoy on North Korea, spoke after meeting with South Korean officials to discuss North Korea's recent missile tests. Meanwhile, nuclear negotiations between Washington and Pyongyang remain stalled.
And we have made clear that the United States harbors no hostile intent towards the DPRK.
The comments come less than a week after North Korea fired a newly developed ballistic missile from a submarine in its fifth round of weapons tests in recent weeks. I'm Karen Chamas.
A 6.5 magnitude earthquake struck Taiwan. The quake hit about 65 kilometers northeast of Hualien City on Taiwan's northeast coast. Reuters' Emma McCarthy has more.
Buildings shook in Taipei on Sunday as a 6.5 magnitude earthquake struck northeastern Taiwan. There were no reports of damage. The quake had a depth of 41.5 miles and could be felt across the northern, eastern and western parts of Taiwan, with the epicentre in Yilan County, according to the Weather Bureau. The Taipei Metro was briefly closed for checks, but reopened shortly afterwards. The state-run power operator said the grid was operating as normal, while the Railway Administration said it was carrying out track inspections. TSMC, the world's largest contract chipmaker, said it had evacuated some workers. Taiwan lies near the junction of two tectonic plates and is prone to earthquakes. More than 100 people were killed in a quake in southern Taiwan in 2016, while a 7.3 magnitude quake killed more than 2,000 people in 1999.
That was Reuters' Army McCarthy. A new report says that of all the shortages affecting the U.S. economy, the housing shortage will likely last the longest. The report by Goldman Sachs forecasts that prices for U.S. homes will climb another 16% through 2022 after having already surged 20% through the past year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Economists were already warning that the pandemic had pushed Americans to the brink of a new rental crisis, whose impact was avoided in the short term by safety nets like rental subsidies and eviction moratoriums around the country. In August, the U.S. Supreme Court blocked the Biden administration's order extending the federal eviction moratorium. In her new book, Housing for Humans, a book to imagine, create, and design a new housing model in America, architect Ileana Shinder explores the history and causes of America's housing crisis. She challenges homeowners, policymakers, and architects to reimagine the future of housing for a growing population while considering a number of factors like the evolving family models and the regulatory constraints that have impeded home building. She tells me that the current housing shortages affect mostly low-income earners.
The eviction moratorium and the pandemic affected directly people whose income got more affected faster by the pandemic. That means that people in the lower brackets, minorities, that means that the government and the recognized for once that having an affordable place to live actually means a stronger economy for everyone. So aside from what each party and the legal implications of that moratorium meant is that for once, everyone recognized that having safe and affordable housing is a right, is something that works for everyone, not just for those occupying those homes.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. Is there a housing crisis in America?
Definitely, yes.
What's the cause of that crisis?
The cause of that crisis is many layers. The main one is the lack of a variety of affordable housing types in the locations where there's high housing demand. There are houses that stop working for too many groups of people. We used to think that housing was something that people would access and own early in life with no problem. Basically, you go to college or you graduate from high school, you start working, say, for a few years, and you're able to buy a house that will work for your family. But with time, not only that economic reality has changed, where people come burdened by debt from education, but also degrees and jobs offer less opportunity that offer less option for housing. But also family has changed too. People change family formats from older parenthood to getting married older. People retire at a later life. People want different things from their homes. So aside from the critical parts where just people are not able to afford housing, also the available housing stock does not match what the available funds for that housing are coming from. So it's a multiple prong problem, not just from financial, but also cultural and social.
Is there a difference culturally in how we understand housing?
Definitely. Like I said, it used to be back in the, in the post-war era where one house meant one family of mom and dad and two kids, and you would live in that house until the day you retired, or maybe even after retirement. You would get your house, you would get access to a house very early in your productive life, such as, in your mid-20s.
Right.
Yeah, like mid-20s, you would be able to afford a house, probably in a nice suburb. And you would hold on to that house and pay the mortgage because your career was very stable and your income was very stable. And you probably also stay in your job for 34 years. That was, since the 50s and on. And then now it's becoming more prominent, the idea that not only people don't stay in their jobs, but their income vary, their family formats vary, their crises that impact that.
Right.
So the crisis and the idea that one house is one family forever is fueling the crisis as well, where people hit healthcare crisis or other type of issues that they're not able to afford the house that are available in their area.
Okay, so let me ask you this. The pandemic highlighted the housing crisis in an interesting way, and I'm not talking about the increase in housing prices, but the fact that many low-income families, like you said, live with large extended families in often smaller spaces. How did COVID impact such family settings?
Well, one thing that the data is coming out, and this is I'm not a lot of organizations have researched these, but the data shows that families that live in crowded conditions and multi-generational conditions in crowded spaces were affected earlier and harder than those that are not. That has to do, of course, with income. So the income gap also showed a gap in the outcome of the disease. Also because the people that live in those conditions tended to lose their jobs faster and having a larger, you know, a less padded savings account that would allow them to avoid crisis.
That was Ileana Shinde. She's the author of the new book, Housing for Humans, a book to imagine, create, and design a new housing model in America. I reached her here in Washington, D.C. We'll bring you the second part of our conversation with Ileana later on this week. Voice of America! Afghan women leaders are calling on the United Nations member countries to pressure the Taliban to keep their promises and allow women to work and girls to study. As VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports, girls are still banned from secondary school under Taliban rule in Afghanistan.
Let girls learn. That was the demand of Afghan women leaders living in exile who spoke at the United Nations this week. Naheed Farid is a former member of the Afghan parliament.
Today marks the 34th day that Afghan girls banned from attending secondary school. Extrajudiciary killings, public executions, ethnic cleansing, molestations, mass killings takes place in Afghanistan as we speak.
Ever since the Taliban took back power in Afghanistan in late August, Afghan women have been taking to the streets, demanding the Islamist group allow them back into the workplace and let girls return to school as promised. So far, the Taliban is only letting a very limited number of women work, such as some midwives and nurses, and have said they will let girls return to school in accordance with Sharia law. Tariq Ahmed of Wimbledon is a special representative for the United Kingdom.
So let me address the Taliban quite directly. Islam provides for women's rights. It does not deny it. Islam provides for education for all, not just for boys, but for girls. Islam talks of empowerment of all communities, protection of minorities, not the suppression of them.
Afghan women want a seat at the table. Asila Wardak of the Afghan Women's Network says,
please do not talk about me in these discussions. Create spaces for me and other Afghan women leaders to talk directly with the Taliban. This is how you meaningfully include women in peace process and peace and security process as well as humanitarian assistance projects. Give us a seat at the table. Do not put us into the corridor.
At the United Nations, several Afghan women leaders warned of the dire humanitarian situation in their homeland and said women should not just be beneficiaries of aid, but also leaders in distribution. Fawzia Kufi is a former member of the Afghan parliament.
It is imperative that the UN demand the protection and inclusion of Afghan women in every stage of aid and humanitarian aid distribution, from planning to implementation and being the recipients.
For now, girls are only allowed to attend primary school in Afghanistan, and in many cases, teachers have not been paid their salary in 2 months. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
And still in Afghanistan, the UN Development Program is launching a plan to help millions of Afghans who have lost their livelihoods in the midst of the recent political turmoil for them to regain the ability to earn a living and feed their families. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Turkey is facing diplomatic pushback after President Erdogan called for the expulsion of 10 ambassadors, including the U.S. ambassador, after they called for the release of a jailed civil society leader. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
The Netherlands, Denmark and Norway all issued statements saying they remain committed to defending human rights in Turkey, while the United States and Germany said they were seeking clarification. The countries are among 10 whose ambassadors Erdogan Saturday declared persona non grata, a diplomatic term used to expel a person. The Turkish president condemned the ambassadors for their rare joint statement calling for the release of the Turkish philanthropist Osman Kavala, a move Erdogan condemned as interference in Turkey's affairs.
Zira bunlar Türkiye'yi tanıyacaklar.
Erdogan said they will know and understand Turkey. The day they do not know and understand Turkey, they will leave. Kavala is one of Turkey's most prominent civil society supporters and a critic of Erdogan. He's accused of seeking to overthrow Erdogan by funding the 2016 coup attempt and 2013 civil unrest. He's been in jail for 4 years, but has not been convicted and denies all charges against him. The Turkish president claims he's defending Turkey's independence, a stance some observers say plays well with his nationalist voting base. Presidential elections have to be held by 2023. Political columnist Ilhan Ulusgel of Devar News Portal says Erdogan could be using tough diplomacy to divert public attention from a plummeting currency and looming economic crisis.
Erdogan is losing his popularity because the economic conditions are terrible. But if Erdogan has problem with the United States, it works for the nationalist voters. And he may accuse the opposition that they're collaborating with foreign powers and with CIA, etc., with Washington, to topple him.
None of the 10 ambassadors have so far received formal notification they've been declared persona non grata. Observers say it remains to be seen whether Erdogan is ready to carry out the diplomatic expulsions, a move that could further exacerbate the country's financial woes and isolation from its traditional Western allies. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
Saudi Arabia's crown prince says that it aims to reach net zero emissions of greenhouse gases by 2060. That will be 10 years after the United States. Reuters' Soraya Ali reports.
Saudi Arabia's crown prince said on Saturday that the country aims to reach net zero emissions of greenhouse gases by 2060, 10 years later than the United States. Saudi Arabia is the world's top oil exporter. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and his energy minister said the country would tackle climate change, but also stressed the continued importance of hydrocarbons and said it would continue to ensure oil market stability. He said it would double the emissions cuts it plans to achieve by 2030. They were speaking at the Saudi Green Initiative ahead of the COP26, the UN climate conference in Glasgow at the end of the month, which hopes to agree deeper global emissions cuts to tackle global warming. The United States is committed to achieving net zero, meaning that it emits no more greenhouse gases than it can capture or absorb by 2050. But China and India, the world's second and third biggest emitters, have not committed to this timeline.
That was Reuters' Soraya Ali. 46 countries and the European Union have adopted a legally binding mechanism under the so-called Aarhus Convention to protect environmental defenders who risk abuse and harm because of their work. Lisa Schlein joins us again from Geneva with this report.
The Aarhus Convention was adopted in 1998 in the Danish city of Aarhus under the auspices of the United Nations Economic Commission for Europe. It is the only global legally binding treaty linking environmental and human rights concerns. However, UN officials say many of the rights guaranteed under the treaty are being violated. In recent years, UNECE Executive Secretary Olga Algayerova says there have been many reports of these rights not being honored.
We have seen an increasing trend of environmental defenders living under the threat of retaliation and in the fear for their lives, especially in cases where they speak out against spatial planning and large-scale infrastructural projects. No one should live in fear for standing up for the environment and where they live.
The UNECE says environmental defenders have been threatened, harassed, intimidated, and even killed because of protest actions against the construction of a dangerous dam, harmful agricultural practices, and other environmentally destructive projects. The new agreement establishes a post for a special rapporteur on environmental defenders. The official will be able to provide a rapid response to alleged violations as stipulated under the Aarhus Convention. Special rapporteur on the situation of human rights defenders, Mary Lawler, says the creation of this rapid response mechanism could be of enormous benefit to environmental defenders.
As I outlined in my report to the Human Rights Council earlier this year, 50% of the human rights defenders killed, as recorded by OHCHR in 2019, had been working with communities around issues of land, environment, impacts of business activity, poverty and rights of Indigenous peoples, Afro-descendants, and other minorities.
A report by Global Witness last year found of the more than 300 human rights defenders who were killed, 70% were environmental defenders. The new agreement outlines the various tools available to the special rapporteur for resolving complaints and protecting environmental defenders quickly and effectively. They include issuing immediate protection measures, using diplomatic channels, releasing public statements, and bringing urgent cases to relevant human rights bodies for action. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And in other news, Russia on Sunday condemned a decision by the U.S. to add Russians seeking U.S. visas to a list of, quote, homeless nationals who can apply for visas in third countries. The move allowed Russians to apply for U.S. visas in Warsaw instead of their home country after the American embassy stopped processing most visa applications in May due to Moscow's ban on employing embassy staff in Russia. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. And while there, check on our other programs like Upfront, Africa 54 TV show, Straight Talk Africa, Our Voices, and many others. And remember to connect with us on social media platforms. We are on Facebook, on Twitter, and on YouTube. Just search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. For the first time, astronomers using the Hubble Space Telescope and other space and ground-based telescopes have observed the first stages of an exploding supernova. Rick Pantaleo tells us more in today's Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
When astronomers say they discovered a supernova, what they actually saw are the after effects or remains of a massive star's exploding death. It can be compared to investigating an auto accident after it occurred. Until recently, scientists haven't really witnessed a supernova before or during its explosive fate. Astronomers using NASA's Hubble Space Telescope and other space and ground-based observatories were able to make extraordinary observations of the first moments of a star's catastrophic death. It's thought such observations could provide scientists with an early warning of a star's demise. Called SN 2020 FQV, the observed supernova is located in what is known as the Interacting Butterfly Galaxies, located about 60 million light-years away in the constellation Virgo. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
International Edition continues. Several language learning schools and tutors tell Reuters News about an increased interest in learning the Korean language. They attribute it to the hit Netflix series Squid Game. As VOA's Steve Miller explains, it underscores a growing global obsession with South Korean culture that ranges from entertainment to beauty products.
The language learning app Duolingo has reported a 76% rise in new users signing up to learn Korean in Britain and a 40% increase in the United States after the show's premiere. Duolingo said it has more than 7.9 million active users learning Korean, its second fastest growing language after Hindi. Speaking to Reuters News, Katarina Costa, a 24-year-old from Portugal, who's living in Toronto, Canada, has been learning the language via the e-learning platform Talk to Me in Korean.
when I started learning to Korean 2 years ago, people didn't understand why. But now Korean is more mainstream in the Western world, and people get fascinated when I say that I'm learning Korean.
Sun Hyun-woo is the founder of Talk to Me in Korean, and he tells Reuters News that the platform has 1.2 million members across 190 nations.
사실 오징어 게임 열풍이나 BTS 열풍이 있기 전에도 한국어를 배우신
There were thousands of people who wished to learn Korean even before Squid Game or the BTS craze. Yet those were often studying in solitude. They had very few people around who studied the language. Now Squid Game and BTS have become a global phenomenon.
근데 이제 전 세계적인 좀 현상이 되었잖아요. 오징어 게임이나 BTS가
South Korea has established itself as a global entertainment hub with its vibrant pop culture, including the boy band BTS and the Oscar-winning movie Parasite and film Minari. Earlier this month, an affiliate of BTS's agency released the song Ganada, aiming to teach the Korean alphabet Hangul and promote the language. Recently, the Oxford English Dictionary added 26 new words of Korean origin to its latest edition, including Hallyu or the Korean Wave, the term that is widely used to describe the global success of South Korean music, film, television, fashion, and food. South Korea's President Moon Jae-in welcomed the additions, calling the Korean alphabet the country's soft power. Steve Miller, VOA News.
A bomb blast at a drinking joint Saturday killed one person, instantly injuring several others in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Local police said that they're investigating the matter. President Yoweri Museveni in a tweet says that they suspect a terrorism act. The blast comes barely 2 weeks after the UK government warned of an impending terrorist attack in the East African country. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
President Museveni made his comments Sunday in a series of tweets pledging to bring the perpetrators to justice. His remarks come hours after Saturday's explosion ripped through the Digida bar, which was crowded with people eating and drinking. Naweso Jemima is a waitress at the bar. She says, "We thought there were gunshots, considering the fact that this bar had been talked about in the news." She also says, "We were shocked to see all the chairs had burned, beer bottles were broken. I turned to see a colleague's back had been torn to pieces. Another had his hand and feet torn off." Police spokesperson Fred Enanga says their joint task force team also categorized the incident as an act of terrorism.
Three men disguised as customers arrived at the eating point at around 8:30 p.m. And amongst these three, one of them was carrying a polythene bag containing unknown items that he placed under the table where they sat. They disappeared afterwards, abandoning their package at the scene.
Enanga says the explosion covered a radius of 5 square meters, suggesting an improvised explosive device was used.
Our joint team of bomb experts has established that the explosion was out of a crude device, which was assembled using local materials of nails, other metallic fragments.
There has been no claim of responsibility. Earlier this month, Britain issued an alert in which it warned that terrorists were planning attacks in the African nation. But Ugandan police say at this point, there is no link between the Saturday night incident and the warnings. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Remember to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest.